welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. Or maybe we should call it Scary Sunday. It's turning into Scary Sunday. Well, this topic of EMPs is huge, and we need to get a lot smarter about this because we need to figure out how to put some pressure to get this whole thing looked at and back online. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And we have our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, with us this afternoon, actually. I was going to say this morning, but it's actually afternoon. So I read you part of his bio earlier. I'm going to pick a different section. He served as the professional staff on the House Armed Services Committee of the U.S. Congress with portfolios in nuclear strategy, WMD, Russia, China, NATO, the Middle East, intelligence, and terrorism from 1995 to 2001. While serving on the House Armed Services, Dr. Pry was chief advisor to the vice chairman of the House Armed Services Committee and the vice chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, and to the chairman of the terrorism panel. Bottom line is, Dr. Pry is not making this stuff up. He didn't learn it in his basement. I don't even know if he has a basement. If he does, I hope he uses it. But he played a key role running hearings in Congress that warned terrorists and rogue states could pose EMP and cyber threats. Imagine that. Establishing the Congressional EMP Commission, helping the commission to develop plans to protect the United States from EMP and cyber warfare, and working closely with the senior scientists and the nation's top experts on critical infrastructures, EMP, and cyber warfare. And that's electromagnetic pulse is the EMP part. I think most people know that, but
well, there's a lot
never
of,
can tell.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk right now in the news about the North Korean threat and Rocket Man setting off all these nuclear weapons over there.
And I think everybody thinks, well, we'll just shoot it down once it gets up there. We'll be all good.
Shoot it down. But what you were just saying, Peter, about having the ability to launch one of these things from a freighter or whatever, I mean, we're talking flight time of probably less than a minute. How close would one of these nuclear missiles have to be to the United States to set off an EMP in our country big enough to shut our grid down?
All it has to do, you just have to get a warhead above an altitude of 30 kilometers. And now that won't cover the whole country, okay? But you don't have to cover the whole country. That's another misconception that's
right
out there, that the EMP field has to cover the whole country. Now, the North Koreans actually are in a position several times a day to cover our whole country potentially with an EMP field because they have two satellites orbiting over this country, one called the KMS-3 and the other the KMS-4, at the optimum altitude if they were nuclear-armed. You don't know if they've got a nuke on them or not, but if one of those satellites or both of them are nuclear-armed, they do happen to pass over the ideal location to put an EMP field over all of North America, or most of North America, all 48 contiguous United States, most of Canada, and a good chunk of Mexico. Now, if you were to do a ship-launched EMP using an SA-2 missile, a surface-to-air missile, such as the North Koreans managed to position in the Gulf of Mexico in 2013, this was in the immediate aftermath of what up to that time had been our most serious crisis with North Korea up to that time. The North Koreans had conducted their third illegal test in February of 2013. And that's when Kim Jong-un started threatening that he could strike the United States and destroy the United States. And they had orbited their first satellite just a couple of months before that, obviously in anticipation of this crisis. But toward the tail end of the crisis, we didn't know it at the time, but they managed to get a freighter into the Gulf of Mexico that had SA-2 nuclear-capable missiles on board. We didn't know about this. They came in from the Atlantic side, and it was as if they wanted to see how much they could get away with, to see if they could get back through the Panama Canal to return to North Korea. So they tried to do that. The inspection of the ship, though, the ship was flagged for inspection, not because we knew there were missiles on board, but because this particular freighter had been used for smuggling drugs, small arms to terrorists in the past, and so it was on the drug inspection list. Hidden under thousands of bags of sugar, they found two SA-2 missile launchers with the missiles mounted on them so they could be launched. Fortunately, they didn't have warheads on them. They didn't have nuclear warheads. But it looks like an exercise might have been performed to see if they could get in our backyard. And just using two missiles like that, They don't have very long range, but they can get up above 30 kilometers. And if they had launched one of those from the Gulf of Mexico and put it anywhere over the eastern part of the United States, that would be enough to take down the eastern grid. And, you know, we can't survive as a society even without the eastern grid. It's the biggest, most important part. We basically have two big grids in this country, the eastern grid, the western grid, and the Texas grid. Most of the population is supported by the eastern grid. All of our, or almost all of our nuclear reactors are on the eastern grid, and 75% of our electricity is generated by the eastern grid. You see, the EMP field would probably be at 30 kilometers, about 600 kilometers in radius. That wouldn't cover the whole eastern grid, but would destroy enough of it so that you would end up having a cascading blackout that would basically be permanent. Think of what happened during the Great Northeast Blackout of 2003. You know, it shows how vulnerable our electric grid is to this cascading failures. The Great Northeast Blackout of 2003 that put 50 million Americans in dark blacked out New York City, so the people had to walk home across the Brooklyn Bridge because the subways wouldn't run, was all started by a tree branch coming in contact with a high power line in Ohio. And it caused the northeastern United States to black out from that single point failure.
Wow.
Imagine if you had an EMP field 600 kilometers in radius to destroy electronics within a circle of that size. Obviously, it would cause an enormously catastrophic and permanent blackout.
Now, would that cascade effect, would that have the ability to cascade into one of the other grids other than just the eastern grid? I mean, are they all kind of tied together? Would one kind of overload the other if it went down?
No, they are physically separated, which is why some smart people in Texas, a Senator Bob Hall, for example, understanding these things and having formerly worked in the U.S. Air Force on EMP, tried to get Texas protected from EMP for several years in a row. He's introduced legislation. They've got a study going on in Texas, and I've supported that. One of the things people should understand is you're not dependent on the federal government. You know, you can actually protect the state, even if it's part of the eastern grid. You know, if you put in the Faraday cages, the surge arresters in the grid in your state, you can keep your state alive even while everything else goes down all around you. So the solution is not necessarily limited to the federal level. Some people think that we'll have a better shot working from the grassroots up at the state level. And some states, Maine, for example, Virginia, Florida, and Arizona have passed legislation and have done some things. Virginia has probably done the most to protect themselves already from EMP. I'm hoping that other states will follow. If we get a critical mass, enough states doing things, the feds will be dragged along, hopefully. The federal government did pass one of the accomplishments of the EMP Commission. Is we did get them to pass a thing back last year called the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act. And it requires the Department of Homeland Security to educate the states on EMP and to help them to launch pilot projects in the states to show you how you can protect the grid and to show how it can be done cost-effectively. We've actually got a project going on in Louisiana, which I hope will survive the termination of the EMP Commission, which would pioneer a pathway for all the states to follow, a political and technological pathway for all the states to follow to get themselves protected. But that's where we are. There are solutions to this. I know this has been sounding big and scary, and it should be scary.
Yes, exactly. It is scary.
And people should, but I don't want people to despair. There's no reason for us to be vulnerable. One of the reasons I've dedicated my professional life, as has my colleagues, to this particular issue is there's no excuse for this country to be vulnerable to EMP. This is one of the few existential threats we can take off the table and protect our children and grandchildren from it. And I thought I was naive enough when I started this back in 1995 when I left CIA to start working for Congress that we could fix the problem in a year. We'd pass a bill, fix the problem in a year. And here I am, and I'm an old man, and we still haven't got the problem. And it's because it's taken me years to learn that the chief problem is not technical, and it's not the money, it's the politics of EMP.
Mm-hmm.
I've grown old fighting the EMP war, the EMP political war. One other obstacle, we were talking about why hasn't the country been protected, and we talked about the institutional impediments from the industry from the Department of Defense, from the Department of Homeland Security. Let me just mention two other factors, and then we can move on. Another institutional impediment is the fact that an EMP can be caused by Mother Nature, and it can be caused by man. Because if it can be caused by nature, the Department of Defense says, well, this is the Department of Homeland Security's problem. You know, the geomagnetic storm is the big threat, so they should be working on it, not us. And the Department of Homeland Security will say, well, man can cause an EMP threat. North Korea can do an EMP attack. And the damage from a nuclear EMP is worse than a natural EMP, so this should be Department of Defense's job. So this finger-pointing between the agencies, where the threat that threatens everybody belongs to no one, that phenomena has been a major impediment. And the last, and one of the most serious impediments, is corruption in the mainstream liberal news media, which is most of the media in this country, where people get most of their information. There's a corrupt process that's happened has to do, it's not just with carrying with political correctness and doing what the Obama administration did. Obviously, the Obama administration, as I explained earlier, didn't want to do anything with EMP. But there's this other phenomenon that's perhaps even worse, that has to do with how people, the so-called experts, make their living in the mainstream media. You know, nobody ever wants to admit that they don't know. Okay,
no.
People make their living, whether they're nonprofits or they want to get as much face time on TV, radio, in the press as possible, and so they will, even when they don't understand and they're not expert on a topic, they'll pretend that they are. And maybe we've gotten to a point where these people, even when they've got a PhD in physics, are so arrogant that they convince themselves that because they've got that PhD in physics that they must be an expert in EMP too, which is not true. You know, a person with a degree in physics is not an expert on EMP. That's not even the right degree. You know, to be a technical expert on EMP, you should have a doctorate in electrical engineering and a specialty in electromagnetic pulse physics. There's only 1,500 people in the whole free world that have got a credential like that. Either that, or you should have been working in your professional life in the Department of Defense or the intelligence community on EMP, you know, which is where I got my expertise. Very few people have that kind of a background, but we are outnumbered. People who are really experts are outnumbered by 100 or 1,000 to 1 by non-experts who are more than glad to pretend that they are experts, and usually because they don't know about EMP, they assume that it couldn't be a real threat, or that it's science fiction. While we were having this interview, a colleague of mine sent me another article that appeared in the National Interest saying that EMP is a loony threat, that the idea of an EMP weapon is a loony threat, as it's characterized, written by somebody who's a political scientist who doesn't know anything about EMP.
People
like Jeffrey Lewis and Joseph Butt, you know, the reporters get used to going back to these guys for answers because they find these guys always seem to have answers for everything. But the reporters themselves are technological and scientific illiterates, and not capable of judging whether a person really knows what they're talking about. I mean, this is really malpractice happening on the minds of the American people by their media.
And
you know, where they are having people. Instead of it being EMP, let's change the subject and talk about brain surgery. Let's suppose it's brain surgery. To me, it's just unethical and wrong. You know, when all you are is a political scientist or you're just a physicist and you don't really have expertise on EMP, to pretend that you do is just as bad as if you pretended you were an expert on brain surgery and, you know, and you don't have a medical degree of any kind and have never had any experience in surgery, but you're going to hold forth and pretend that you are an expert in that field.
And they stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's, we hear that.
We got to get that in there.
That's the media on pretty much any topic.
Well, you
got
to get the beautiful people in there, and then you only interview them for 2 minutes, which is why we've decided to dedicate our show to expert people and giving them time to speak, except for the celebrations of capitalism that we have to take every 15 minutes, which would be right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes after our little celebration of capitalism. And our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and I hope you'll tap onto the website, I just added the TV documentary that was made on his book called Electronic Armageddon at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. Brings me round and get to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh no, 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 I'm a rocket man. Rocket man, burning out as cute as I've ever known.
Speaking of Rocket Man. Okay, so Dr. Pry, what are we gonna do with North Korea? I mean, this is a huge situation now. No one's working on hardening the electrical grid because that's been disbanded.
Well, I remember
North
too.
North Korea's.
Yeah, I mean, they're launching these. You know, I remember there was a
I wasn't asking you. I was asking him.
I know, but I want to bring up your point here.
Oh, okay.
They showed pictures on the news of these last missiles that he launched. And the effective range, and they showed these flight patterns of how far these missiles would go, launched from mainland North Korea, they could reach the West Coast. Well, what if they went into, you know, orbit and flew over the middle of the country and detonated in the upper atmosphere? Is that a possibility?
Oh, absolutely. And the commission has been warning about that. You know, that they don't need to reenter the atmosphere with a reentry vehicle. They could use one of these satellites. They've already demonstrated the capability to orbit satellites over the United States, and we've had two of these satellites orbiting over us.
But could they launch from mainland and send a nuclear weapon over our country from mainland North Korea and detonate in the upper atmosphere?
Yes. Even the intelligence community. Which is, and I say even the intelligence community, because, you know, it isn't, even though Mike Pompeo and Dan Coats are respectively the director of CIA and the director of national intelligence, and we've got figureheads at the top of the intelligence community but appointed by President Trump, it is not President Trump's intelligence community. This is still the Obama administration intelligence community that has been loath to acknowledge the North Korean threat, and they have been lowballing the North Korean threat. The EMP Commission has been warning that they've been lowballing this threat for years. You may recall this last summer, most Americans haven't noticed it, but there's been an enormous watershed that happened this past summer. Because going into the summer, a position of the intelligence community and of many so-called experts was North Korea didn't have ICBMs yet, not really. Many people were arguing that the ICBMs they had were fake missiles and that they wouldn't even work. Oh, all right. And then they demonstrated with their launch on the 4th of July that they aren't fake missiles. And indeed, the other part of the argument I would add was that even if they did work, they wouldn't have the range to reach the mainland of the United States, that they could only reach Alaska or Hawaii. And the missile launches from this summer and the most recent missile launch have belied all that. Now, even the Obama administration intelligence community concedes that the North Korean ICBMs can hit anywhere in North America. You know, that they've got the range to do that. And we knew that. We knew that years ago. Because these lofted trajectory flights that they were performing, some of them flew for 40 minutes. 40 minutes, okay? Even though the range they were traveling on the ground was not great, they were traveling on lofted trajectories, high into space, powered flight for 40 minutes. Now, Russian ICBMs only take 30 minutes to reach the United States from Central Asia, and they're further away than North Korea, okay? So if you can fly a missile for 40 minutes in any direction, it's going to be able to reach anywhere in the United States. And they should have known that years ago, but no, they had to wait until North Korea made it so clear that not even they could continue to deny it.
Right.
Well,
another thing they're doing is they're focusing on their ability to hit a city? You know, do they have the technology to really put one in L.A. or you know, Portland?
That's what we're obsessing about.
Well, that's what we're obsessing about. But apparently, it doesn't matter if they can just get it up in the air. They can turn it loose anywhere.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's precisely it. An EMP threat is a much bigger threat. It'll kill. It's the only way of destroying us and winning a nuclear war and destroying us as a civilization. What would you get if you nuked this city, okay? You know, they only have about a dozen ICBMs. You know, we would turn North Korea into a plate of glass if they nuked this city. But if they did an EMP attack, there's a chance we might not be able to retaliate at all. If they, as we suspect, if they've got the super EMP weapon that can generate 100,000 volts per meter on the ground, which is what the North Koreans claim they've got in their technical report, that would paralyze the command. Our military forces, including our ICBMs and our bombers and our command and control assets to talk to our submarines, are only hardened to half that field strength, to 50,000 volts per meter at most. So not only would it enable them to knock out the United States with one weapon, but it could stop us from retaliating, you know, by frying and paralyzing our strategic forces. So it's the only realistic, sensible way for the North Koreans to attack if they were to attack us. This idea of just blasting a city is just a suicidal, right, you know, for them to do that.
Well, I was reading in one of your articles that the reason China and Russia are slow to react to the North Korean threat is they're using them as a proxy. And, you know, let this nut go ahead and launch one. They can blame him. They'd be in a perfect position at that point to do pretty much whatever they want if we're basically incapacitated by an EMP.
Well, yes, this is another theme that the Commission had been warning about for many years, because it just seems so obvious to us that the North Korean nuclear missile threat is built on Russian and Chinese technology, you know. And this isn't speculation. We know it. We see it. And even the Obama intelligence community, this data is in front of their eyes, but they don't want to acknowledge it. The Russians sold a dozen Gulf class ballistic missile submarines to North Korea, allegedly for scrap. Okay, but surprise, surprise, the North Koreans didn't use them for scrap. They started reverse engineering them so that they could figure out how to make their first ballistic missile submarine, the Sinpo 1, which the intelligence community didn't think was possible for them for many years, even for decades. But here they are. They've already got a ballistic missile submarine. They also gave them the SSN-6 missile, which is an intercontinental ballistic missile. And most of the North Korean ICBMs have been based on the Russian SSN-6 technology. The more recent, most successful ICBMs bear striking resemblance to Chinese ICBMs. And we know the TALs, the transporter erector launchers for these ICBMs. This is not an insignificant piece of technology, a transporter erector launcher that can transport an entire ICBM and launch and fire it from, like, the middle of the woods somewhere. You know, an ICBM weighs a tremendous amount. These trucks are enormous. They're mobile firing pads with all the command and control launch technology you need inside the truck. These are not made by North Korea. They're made by China. And even during a parade that they had in Pyongyang displaying their mobile ICBMs, they forgot to scrape the logo off of one of these trucks. The logo for the Chinese factory where it was made.
Oops.
So the Chinese, this is a joke, the idea that the Chinese and Russians were making an enormous foreign policy mistake by going with our head in our hands and asking the Chinese and the Russians to help us against North Korea. North Korea is a pawn in a big geostrategic nuclear chess game. They are playing against us. And every time we do that, it strengthens their hand because it signals to our allies that their security is not dependent on the United States, but it's dependent on China and Russia helping the United States. At some point, our allies may decide to switch sides, you know, because they will get better protection from China or Russia via the North. Have you ever noticed that North Korea never threatens to attack China or Russia? Never. Sometimes they get ruffled. There's some diplomatic words, but it's the good cop, bad cop kind of play. But they never have made a threat against China or Russia to attack them the way they do against our allies and against the United States themselves. The object here of Russia and China is to win without war, if possible, but with war, if necessary. What they're hoping to do is raise the stakes so high, because it's a game changer. It changes the geostrategic calculus of risk when our own country is now at risk from North Korea. You know, our security guarantees to Japan, South Korea, and our other Pacific allies were based on the idea that, you know, we could support them without risk to our own homeland. But now that our homeland is at risk, they're hoping that our Washington elites and the American people themselves will say, is it really worth putting 320 million Americans at risk for the national security of these distant countries who haven't really spent enough on protecting their own national security? Why should we put ourselves at risk when Japan and South Korea have failed to do what was necessary, have failed even to ask for help and asked us to, hey, stop the North Korean program years ago? Instead, they want us to enter into a mutual assured destruction relationship now with the madman in Pyongyang. Russia and China are hoping that our answer to that question will be no. You know, this is too risky. You're on your own. We're going to go into a Fortress America isolationist posture. And they're aware that there are many Americans who, both on the left and the right, who feel that way, who feel that the time has come for the United States to withdraw from the world. They want to encourage us to withdraw from the world in the Pacific. And if it happens in the Pacific and if they are successful there, see Iran going nuclear next. And they'll play the same game out again in the Middle East and Europe with our European allies to try to get us to withdraw from there. They would like to win without war. As Sun Tzu said, the greatest victory is to achieve victory without fighting. And that's what they're trying to do with nuclear weapons. That's what makes nuclear weapons strategic weapons. It's a chess game so that you can win wars without actually fighting them. The way we won the Cold War against the Soviet Union, without fighting a war, because of the success of our nuclear deterrence strategy. They're trying to do the same thing to us now. However, if it's necessary to fight a war, they're willing to do that too, and able to do it through North Korea without taking risk themselves. That's the game. And our failure to let it get to this point has really put us in a situation where we don't have any good choices anymore. The situation is so bad, I really don't think there are any diplomatic solutions. I'm afraid that we're going to keep going down this path of diplomacy, which, in the final analysis, will mean embracing a mutual assured destruction relationship with North Korea's Pyongyang and Kim Jong-un. And that will surely end with millions of Americans dead. You know, Kim Jong-un is one of the worst actors in history, and it's not like the circumstances are the same as they were during the Cold War. And that's a myth that has also come up among these young people, among these 20-somethings, among people who work in the mainstream media, that somehow mutual destruction, assured destruction, worked during the Cold War. I was there at the CIA. If people knew the real story, how many times we came close to blowing it, you know? There was a dozen times that we nearly went over the edge and ended up in a thermonuclear war with the Soviet Union. It was a miracle that we ended up winning the Cold War without it going nuclear. To then ask our children and our grandchildren to go through that again with Kim Jong-un, I mean, it's stressing the patience of God and fate. It will not end successfully. Bad is not a paradigm for survival. It's a paradigm for self-destruction.
Right. Now, you had mentioned in your article about the ability to strike North Korea successfully, and you talked about the time it would take them to actually fuel and deploy a nuclear weapon relationship to the time it would take us to strike. Let's talk to us a little bit about that.
But we have to take a really quick break before we do that. And just in case, you know, people are wondering, well, how does he know all this stuff? Well, let's see. He was an intelligence officer with the CIA responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy operational plans, military doctrine, threat perceptions, and developing U.S. paradigms for strategic warning. He also served as verification analyst at the U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, responsible for assessing Soviet arms control treaty compliance. So I do believe Dr. Pry is an expert there, and not just your usual talking head that you may have been listening to on MSNBC. You shouldn't be listening to them anyway. They're idiots. But this is We the People Radio. You can find us online and all of the credentials and other information and that article about North Korea as well at wethepeopleradio.us. No one will sleep again after they listen to this.
You know what that is, don't you?
What?
The song.
No.
The love theme from Armageddon, the movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. See, that's why we have Bob. He has to tell us what the music means. In case it goes sailing over our heads. The theme song from Armageddon. Well, that's classic and probably should have been the theme song of the whole show. We are here with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and I just want to point out that the second article that we have posted that was from December 5th of this year, America's epitaph may be Died of Stupidity. I think that's what we should have called. I should just change the name of the show.
Yeah. Killing me with stupidity.
Exactly.
So what is...
I'm not killing you with stupidity.
Well, I know you're
yeah,
not.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Just checking.
In your article, we talked about our ability to launch a strike against them and their inability or lack of intelligence to see it coming without the help of China or Russia. Let's talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I don't even think if we did it right, even China and Russia would be able to give them early warning. My general argument is that Washington, except for President Trump himself, seems to be paralyzed with fear at the idea that if we launch even a limited strike to disarm nuclear North Korea, that Kim Jong-un would in effect destroy Seoul or launch an attack on the United States or do something suicidal. And it's possible that he might. It's possible that he might. But I think the historical record supports the opposite point of view, and that if we were to launch a limited surgical strike, you know, using conventional weapons, do it so quick and do it quickly that so that he would know that it's not an attempt to change the regime, but it's really just a disarming attack against his missiles that pose a threat to the United States and our territories. That he, that even though he's a psychopath, he's not suicidal, and that he wouldn't escalate. And I think that there are some historical precedents to support this. That even psychopaths like Kim Jong-un are not suicidal and extremists. And not inclined to commit suicide. You know, I think of Hitler and the Führer bunker, for example. You know, even when he knew the Red Army was moving in on him, he was still hoping that he could cut a deal with the Allies. And for that reason, right up until the end, he didn't use Taber and Sir nerve gases, which Germany had a monopoly on them. We didn't have Taber and Sir nerve gas, but he would not authorize their use. You know, because he knew that that would ultimately be suicidal and it would vanish his last hope to cut some kind of a deal with the Allies. Israel, when it attacked the Assyrian reactor in Iraq and stopped Saddam Hussein's nuclear program, Saddam Hussein, even though he's a psychopath and just like Kim Jong-un, he did not retaliate against Israel. He knew that that if he did so, it would be the end of him, that Israelis, Mossad, would find a way to knock him off. And so he tolerated the limited strike. It didn't overthrow his regime, but it stopped him from getting nuclear weapons. It happened again in Syria with Hafez al-Assad, where the North Koreans were building basically a nuclear bomb factory in Syria for Assad. And the Israelis launched a successful limited strike there, and Assad did not retaliate for it. During the Persian Gulf Wars, both of them, Saddam Hussein did not use nuclear weapons against the U.S. troops because he knew that would be a suicidal act. And this is called intra-war deterrence. So there are we have some substantial precedents that even dealing with psychopathic evil people, that if that they will take it, they will be they are prudent enough that they will not commit a suicidal act, and that's what it would be if Kim Jong-un decided to launch chemical and biological or even a nuclear attack on Seoul or launch a nuclear attack on one of our allies or the United States itself in response to a very limited attack that just took out his 12 ICBMs, his intermediate range ballistic missiles, maybe take out his Yongbyong, his one known above ground nuclear facility. In my attack, I recommend starting with the satellites that pose a clear and present danger to the United States, that we could just take out the satellites and then have a pause, a diplomatic pause for a possible diplomatic solution. I don't believe any diplomatic solution is going to be possible at this point, just through negotiations. The United States has got to demonstrate that the red line has been crossed and that we are willing to defend ourselves with some military act. At minimum, we should take out those satellites. I have a more ambitious attack plan, limited attack plan for disarming the rest of his nuclear arsenal that goes beyond that. But that's basically the theme. And we could do it because right now he's only got 13 ICBMs. He's got maybe 30 to 60 intermediate range ballistic missiles. You know, it would only take us a few hours with a couple of three aircraft carrier groups, I calculate, to be able to take out those assets. His missiles are also liquid fueled. It takes, they're not solid fueled missiles that can be launched at any moment. You know, it takes at least 90 minutes. Probably several hours to fuel up the missiles for use, and he doesn't have long-range ballistic missile early warning radars or any kind of a technical intelligence apparatus that would give him early warning. You know, so we would be able to be upon him.
Do you think Russia and China, who do have those capabilities, would step in and say, "Hey, they're coming"? Do you think that's a possibility?
I think that that's a possibility for them misinforming him, which is another reason to take them out, because I think that that's why North Korea is a threat to us, not just because of Kim Jong-un, but maybe even more so from Russia and China, that if they decided to launch a nuclear war against us, that they wouldn't do it directly. They could do it indirectly through him by misinforming him. Now, I don't think that they would see us coming either if we did it off of aircraft carrier groups, if we exercised the appropriate communication security and the like. I think we'd be able to do it in a few hours, and it would be like lightning and over before they could even do anything. So that's why I think we would be able to get away with it. At minimum, it would buy us time, you know, so that we'd roll the threat back. It'd still have short-range and medium-range ballistic missiles that are nuclear-armed that would be able to threaten, you know, Japan and South Korea, which is another reason why he wouldn't retaliate in a suicidal way. But at least it would roll it back so that the threat to the United States homeland itself, to the American people, and to our U.S. territories would be rolled back and give us time to either come up with a more complete military solution or regime change, or maybe finally, if we were to exercise our muscles, right, our military muscles, maybe that would finally convince Russia, China, North Korea that the United States is serious enough under this president that they need to back off, that we need to have a negotiated solution. For sure, we're not going to have a solution if we don't act militarily. And the idea that doing nothing is the best policy, I think, will end in disaster. You know, because I think mutual assured destruction with North Korea will, in the end of the day, be exactly that. You know, Kim Jong-un is Caligula armed with nuclear weapons, and either through design or miscalculation someday, he will use those against us. As we move into the last 12 minutes of the show, you've commented a couple of times on how this is not exactly consistent with the Christmas themes of the season, okay?
but you know, actually it's not inconsistent because we're finishing up the first year of President Trump's term. We've had a lot of people with a lot of ideas who are unhappy with a variety of things, and one of the prevailing...
Well, let me try to make it a little, to end on a note, or bring us toward the closure on a note.
Okay, we have to have one more brief celebration of capitalism here. Thank our advertisers. It's a bad time of year to shoot the advertisers in the back. And then we'll be right back with Dr. Peter Pry. I guess I shouldn't talk about shooting anyone in the back. Get me in a lot of trouble.
Bad form.
Bad form. All right, we'll be right back. You can find all the information about the program and the archive after the show ends at wethepeopleradio.us.
I blame you for the moonlit sky and the dream that died with the eagle's flight. I blame you for the moonlit night when I wonder why I'll be seen still dry. Don't blame. The sleigh bells are ringing and the carolers are singing while the air raid sirens blare. It's Christmas at Ground Zero. The button has been pressed. The radio just let us know that this is not a test. Everywhere the atom bombs are dropping. It's the end of all humanity. No more time for last minute shopping. It's time to face your final destiny. It's Christmas at Ground Zero. There's panic.
Yeah, I had to go there, Bob.
We can dodge
serious about this.
The tree.
Oh, my gosh. Well, just when you think there couldn't be a perfect song for this at Christmas time, well, you've got Weird Al. Dr. Pry, go ahead and try to top that here to the top of the hour. And, you know, can you let us know what people can do? You know, how can we put some pressure and maybe help you guys get back in the driver's seat and get the EMP commission going again?
Well, in the last eight minutes, let me add something that's kind of a Christmas thought, though not a cheery one. But on the other hand, Christianity and it's not always about celebration and
true.
Merriment. As one of your advertisers in the break mentioned how our society, you know, is based on the Judeo-Christian tradition. And here, as we celebrate Christmas, you know, one of the icons of Christmas is the Christmas Star of Bethlehem that gave birth to the Prince of Peace. All right? The confrontation we have with North Korea right now is something, I think, really unprecedented. It's almost out of the Old Testament. And to just give you one illustration about why coexistence with North Korea and Kim Jong-un isn't going to work, I contrast, here's one fact I would like to mention. Okay, I mentioned the Star of Bethlehem, the sign of the birth of the Prince of Peace, all right? Those satellites that are orbiting over the United States are named the Kwangmyong-Song 3 and Kwangmyong-Song 4. And the liberal mainstream media translates this as meaning bright star or lodestar. But actually, I think it's out of ignorance. They're not really giving the full history of the significance of those names. In North Korean mythology, the birth of the North Korean nation and people happened with a conqueror who was born on Mount Paeku under a star called the Kwangmyong Song. It was the star of a conqueror, okay? And there might have been some historical reality to him. We believe that he drove Han China out of the Korean Peninsula and created the basis for North Korean civilization. All of the Kims, Kim Jong-un's grandfather, his father, and Kim Jong-un himself, according to official state media, have been born under that star. That star has reappeared, and they have been born on Mount Paeku. They are supposed to be the embodiment, the actual, if not spiritual, rebirth of this conqueror. And so these satellites that are named for that evil star, as it were, I think alone signify to us the grave danger we are in right now and in thinking about trying to coexist with such a monstrosity as a Kim Jong-un, who is the antithesis of everything that the Judeo-Christian society represents. If you just look at his tyranny, it's written even on the bodies of his people, who are smaller in stature, who weigh less, not to mention their spirits and their minds and what's been done to them. dare we put ourselves at risk by trying to coexist with such a society? Is it even a morally and ethically right thing to conceive of going along and getting along and tolerating such a thing? I would remind people to think of the Civil War, what Abraham Lincoln said about the Civil War in his second inaugural address, about how he believed the Civil War was actually a punishment from God for having tolerated slavery. So with that, not exactly cheery thought, but certainly one that I think the Prince of Peace would like us all to contemplate, about whether, even if we could buy our own survival at the price of coexistence with someone like Kim Jong-un, should we? Is that the path we want to follow and should follow if we believe in freedom for all men?
No, you're...
Well, every day we don't do something about this, we literally are rolling the dice.
Yes, exactly. And so even if you don't believe in God, okay, and if you're an atheist, there tends to be a practical price one pays for the ethical choices one makes in life. As we learned bitterly from World War II, when people didn't listen to the Winston Churchills, but listened to the Neville Chamberlains and tried to coexist with Adolf Hitler, and the price was 50 million dead in World War II. But what can we do? I see we've got 3 minutes now. I would encourage all listeners, you know, to call, write, tell their member of Congress, their senator, or congressman to join the Congressional EMP caucus, to join the Congressional EMP caucus, to try to pass a legislation that would to solve this problem for the country. Write, call, tweet President Trump. Remind President Trump that it's in the Republican Party platform on which he was elected that we're supposed to protect the electric grid. It's in the Republican Party platform. It's one of the promises he made. How is that promise fulfilled? By letting the EMP commission be terminated. Maybe the president should intervene and set up a presidential commission under his direction that would protect this country and get it away from the politics of the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, which are still dominated, really, by Obama holdovers. Don't look just to the federal government. Tell your state representative and your state governor, wherever you live, that you want to get your state protected against EMP. Form a state task force to look into this about how you can do it. Reach out to my task force, the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. We are willing to work with the states to provide the expertise for free, you know, to try to get your state protected. And last but not least, we are all our own first line of defense. Be prepared to protect your family. If you can protect yourself, you can also help your neighbors. You'll be in a position to do that. You know, have a food supply, have a water supply, have a plan to protect your family if the lights go out, have a medicine kit, know how to use it. Preparedness for this is just like preparedness for a hurricane or a tornado, except on a more protracted level. And you won't be living in fear. I think it will make you happier, as my parents were happier, being prepared for anything. You know, it was part of the great American tradition to be prepared for anything, right up until a generation or two ago. My mother and father, who lived through the Great Depression and World War II, they'd never heard of EMP, but they were ready for anything. We lived on a quarter of an acre. It was farmed. My mother was canning and storing food all the time. My father taught us how to hunt and fish, not just for recreation, but that's how he fed his family through the Great Depression. And they were happy people because they knew they could protect their own and they could take care of their family. Those are American values that are kind of unique to us, this belief in rugged individualism and self-sufficiency and not trusting that the government is always going to be there to bail you out and expecting the government to play that role. I really think our constitutional republic was designed for people like that. And if we recaptured those great American values, those pioneering values that made America great and free, it would be good for all of us, and I think we would not be living in fear, but be living in happier lives when we can thumb our noses at the Kim Jong-uns of the world.
That's,
amen to that.
Words to live by.
Thank you very much.
Fry, thank you for coming on. We got to have you on again. We got so much more to talk about.
Thank you so much for having me. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Absolutely. Thank you all for joining us. You've been listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.